Hey, welcome to Big Jim's Garage. I'm your host, Big Jim O'Brien. That's the Daves and old people in cars. Special in-studio guest today, talk with Matt Janai from Mob Steel. We're recording this here in the Motor City, but Mob Steel, you've seen them all over the country, obviously, with, you know, if you're a car enthusiast. And Resto Mods, they do some amazing stuff. NBCSN for a year, History Channel as well. You've seen them. Their work's all over the country. Celebrities come here. Post Malone was here to get, like, a Chevy truck from them as well. So, without any further ado, is it ADL? I don't know. Anyway, Matt Janai, Mob Steel, in studio. Look at you, man. Mob Steel's so cool. And it's interesting to me. Mobsteel.com is the website, obviously, for folks if you haven't checked this out. And then, of course, you had the show on TV. Mm-hmm. I always wonder, like, doing the TV show. Obviously, it's great for business and awareness and everything else. But looking back, is there a downside to it?
You're making a totally different product. You know, it's pretty much like we were talking about when I came in the studio. I'm fascinated with how much work and goes into creating this product. And it's, you know, TV is very similar. It's very dynamic. So for us to get up as, like, actual car builders and guys that are used to functioning in a shop and in a different industry, you know, we had to learn how to make a new product. So at first it was interesting. We were unscripted reality TV. So, and our thing was, we really wanted to tell a story. We had opportunity for TV before and turned it down because we had already created a lot of opportunity for ourselves. I had a great team and we had great customers and we were on a great adventure and we weren't, like, you know, killing the game financially, but we didn't care. It was just a neat lifestyle business. And finally, the right opportunity came around with the right person, and it just kind of felt right. And it was our opportunity to kind of start telling the story of the automotive industry and why it's important. And because up to that point, we had essentially started a business in a very poor time and had watched, you know, basically the fall of Detroit.
Well, that's, I was going to say, you say you mentioned the fall of Detroit, Adam. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys, in a lot of ways, were sort of ahead of the curve. Now it's almost, there's a drinking game. Every time the New York Times writes a piece about the resurgence of Detroit, take a shot, you'll be hammered like in a month.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, you guys were really, in a lot of ways, ahead of the curve, telling the story about not the burbs, but actually the city of Detroit and building stuff and working in Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, for example, the Lincoln that you did for your pastor.
Mm-hmm.
When we see it on TV, obviously edited down for time and everything else.
Yep.
What was the arc? What's the timeline on that car for the build?
So interestingly enough, we were the first season on NBC. We were building five of us were building a car every roughly 3 weeks, and it was done in a fashion where we hedged our bets on some things. Okay, well, we can't do this, can't do that. We started to get the formula down. So we were like, okay, that was great. We got to send our message. And then along came History Channel and the same production company. So they came back with a better offer. And, you know, we decided to do it again. And that season, we actually were building cars from the ground up with six of us every 3 to 4 weeks, because we would have a couple cars going at the same time. So the guy that averaged the least amount of hours, and this is crazy truth, but he averaged almost 100. It was 98 point something hours per week is what he averaged. We kept track of everything, because at this point, you know, we had created so much opportunity for ourselves that we had to understand the cost of doing this television show, because it came at a cost. But it was important for us to send the message. So as lucrative as it could be for somebody else, we already had massive overhead. We had a lot of talent in the shop. And it was more of an opportunity to, one, create a likeness for some of my employees and potentially lead them somewhere, you know, greater or lead us somewhere greater.
Well, you mentioned the word overhead, and that's something, Adam, I always wonder, like, because, you know, as we at the radio station here, we did the Stone Soup Project cars for a couple of years, where it's about 10 or 15 years ago when it was JJ and Lynn, and I was the executive producer, and we built a car from the ground up for charity.
Okay.
And we wound up, though, it was supposed to be just a joke to see if we could drive a car on the Woodward Dream Cruise.
Yeah.
And immediately the people from Roush hear about it. So the first car winds up having, like, a small block Roush in it. It's a Mustang. And then it evolves into, like,
amazing,
a 440 Charger with this supercharger on it. And, you know, these hypercars that we're building here in Detroit, these crazy Detroit cars.
That's what happens here.
But as you scale with Mob Steel, though, isn't there a balance? Like you're saying, you got to turn these cars quickly. You have all this on you, this pressure as you grow.
Yeah.
to hold on to what made you Mob Steel and then to keep growing the business. Like, what's the thing about Jesse James? I remember for years, what was it, yellow? He wouldn't paint a car yellow or a motorcycle yellow.
Yeah.
Or you hear green is another color. I'll never do a green one.
It's hard because we're in there because we love what we do. And you hit it on the head. How do you not lose that DNA? And we didn't want to lose that through TV. And I don't really felt we did.
No, you didn't. At least that's what we saw.
Yeah. And I think there was more to offer. I mean, there was a lot left on the cutting room floor, but it has to be entertaining. It has to be a product. It's a different product. And we would have to remind ourselves of that. We have to cut out some of the process, which we love for in the car guys love. They always like, man, I wanted to see more of the build, more of the build. Here's your problem. Only 0.001% of the people want to see the process. What sells the show is the interaction and the entertainment. And I was glad that came through genuine because I've just had such a great relationship with my employees, my wife. We've all been on such a great adventure, and we're all very fortunate. We feel we're very fortunate to be there and be in that position, even in a tough economy. So, I'm glad that came through in TV. And I'm glad it kind of, brought the spotlight back and kind of what our mission is, because we're maturing as a company and we're getting back. We're not just a car builder anymore. We're not a hot rod shop. We still build custom cars, but they serve such a bigger purpose now. We're interacting with much larger companies. We're trying to take our audience and make more of an impact back in what really counts, and it's manufacturing, and that's why we shifted directions or made the addition of Detroit Steel Wheel Co.
Exactly, I was going to say. Yeah.
So that was kind of the purpose of the show, was like, look, a lot of important stuff happened here way back in the day. And instead of making this complex and what we see on the news about bailouts and all stuff, let's get back to the fundamentals of what built these communities and provided great schools and great services and, places for the homeless to go and all that. And that was industry. And industry really created that wealth. And when industry left, I watched it leave. I was part of it. So returning to that and saying, we want to make a product, but we're going to stick to our mission and we're going to make it here. And if we have to forego some profit, which a small business, if it has the right product, can. And we're showing how we do that, how our employees give a little, how we work together to create more opportunity locally. So, that kind of just came out of it. So, we're the kind of people that if we talk the talk, we're going to walk the walk and we back it up. And we went out and said, this is really our mission. We're like, well, we can talk about this all we want, but we need to start executing, because it's action that builds the brands and the characters.
Yeah, and it's not a knock on any city that needs to have business in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one, have retail, and that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because we need another restaurant in Detroit that sells flatbread pizza. Anyway, but there's a to the point, nothing wrong with that, but there's a point where you're right. You do have to be building things in the Motor City. That's what we do here in Detroit. Yeah. And I think anybody listening to us right now, whether you're in Philly or Chicago or LA or New York,
it's the same thing.
We built Camaros for a year in New York City. People don't realize. I mean, we did that. We did that.
Tonawanda, New York, all around the Rust Belt. There's so much talent on this side of the country.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to. I'm glad you said the word talent, Adam, because I kept thinking about this. I've been very blessed to be around a lot of people building cars over the years and some pretty amazing rides and watch what they do. I can bend a piece of steel. Mm-hmm. I can run wires. I could put on a wireless harness. Yeah. I can do all that stuff.
Rare.
Here's the deal though. I can do it, but I can't do it to where it's art. You could show me how to do it, but I can't see what you guys see. So when you're bringing people into the shop at Mob Steel and you're working them in and stuff, is this one of those things you either got it or you don't? I mean, it's the whole artist, or can you teach someone to appreciate cars the way you do?
I think it absolutely can be contagious, and I think everybody in my shop is proof of that. Everybody that's there, and most of my past employees, everybody has something to donate, but ultimately it's the environment that we create that you either adopt or you don't. And it really doesn't boil down to what's your raw talent when you walk in there, because I've brought people in that had never really done anything on a vehicle and now are crazy talented. I think it's more of, for me, it's saying, okay, are you going to build this character? Because it's really that initial making yourself do it. It's having that drive, being competitive, wanting more. It's really the fundamentals. If you have the fundamentals, anything else can happen.
So that's like the guy, like, so see somebody, there's a young guy or man or woman listening right now that's 16, 15 years old, and they're the ones that, like when I was a kid, I would sit there and draw cars all the time. Mm-hmm. I would draw like Trans Am series cars and race cars. I always drew Indy cars. I was obsessed with those. That was my thing. Yeah. And I would draw them all the time. But for that, someone like that, if you've got that passion, you're saying you can mold them if they really genuinely want to do it.
Yeah, you got to put in the work. In a society where we want instant gratification and pats on the back and likes, unfortunately, you know, this is built through action, and your action builds your character, and it builds your, you know, it builds knowledge and information and an experience. And the more, you know, you, in this world, we're here to produce, at bottom line. I mean, it's very simple. If we're here to manufacture something, we're here to produce. And that doesn't mean profits and money. It means, in general, produce. We have to produce for everybody around us and stuff like that. And you have to have that character. You have to be able to say, I want to wake up and I want to do as much as I can for, whether I'm going to work for a paycheck, I want to do as much as I can for that dollar, not as little. And when people have that character, that drive, you can, and you get them hooked up with something they love doing. Now, I've had people that have had that drive. They just weren't a fit in our place because that's really what they were. They weren't cut out to do that the rest of their lives. They found love for something else, whether it was, you know, marketing or design or this or that, or, you know, they can move on. But that ethic, you know, that work ethic and to go to work with some virtue and diligence like that, you know, when you figure that out, anything's possible.
That's what's so, and it is, the word passion comes up a lot. And anyone, I encourage anyone, if you can get an invite or just go hang out at a speed shop somewhere. Go hang out with someone who's doing design stuff like you guys. Go sit in a garage and just watch these guys. There was a friend of mine, Al, this guy does carburetor work. And he's over in Berkeley. And he's like a wizard.
Oh, man.
He can do things to carbs that no, he got 603 horsepower out of 389 tri-power. Who does that? And it was all the carb.
Yeah.
And people pay money to go watch him so they can learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And it's not about money for Al. It's all passion. And when I'm watching you guys and doing the show and the products that, and what you bring out, you can see it right away, man. It's a podcast. Well, you have that shit-eating grin on your face.
Yeah.
You do. I mean, you're like, check this out.
Well, this is hard to explain to people that aren't. I mean, I don't know. We were talking about this the other day. I honestly can't tell you where I adopted. It was just bred into me, I think. It was just everybody around me and the environment and my relatives. I've told the story a ton of times. I just don't remember. I remember being completely fascinated with the vehicles ever since I can remember, period. Like, I remember excited to go to holidays to see what my Uncle Mark or Ralph or, you know, that worked at Ford or the Proving Grounds, what was going to be sitting in that driveway. And, you know, vice versa. My other side of the family was in, you know, the automotive industry sales. You know, they had a dealership. So I was always excited to go to the dealership and see the new Mustangs on the floor or whatever it was. And even to today, the other day, my wife's picking on me because I roll down the window when I see a hot car coming or something. I want to hear it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it. My wife's like, this is ridiculous. Like, you're 44 years old and you're still rolling down the window.
Hey, dude.
I'm like, I just can't. I can't get enough of it.
Ryan, our producers, point me in the other room. I have driven past my exit on 75 because I've seen a car on the freeway that they're a mule that they're testing.
Yeah.
I've gone all the way to Flint and beyond, man.
Me too.
I'm like, I think that's a C8. I'm going. I'm like, I followed minivans for God's sakes. I'm like, that's the Pacifica. Like, what are you, nuts?
Yeah, I don't care what it is.
Right.
A car is a car.
So you said Ford and the family of Ford. Is that where the love of Lincoln Continentals came from?
Yeah. There was my grandfather had an old Lincoln sitting in a barn. You know, when I was like 12, it was my uncle had got it. They bought it from my uncle. And I just loved playing in that car. I mean, the suicide door car, it was just, you know,
it's awesome.
It was an incredible vehicle.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if it was in that good a shape now that I think back on it, but it was in good enough shape where, you know, everything worked and you'd open the doors and sit in it. And I just remember being fascinated with that door, even at 12, 10, 12 years old, was like, you know, I felt BA getting in that thing, man.
What did you think about the new one? The one that Lincoln brought out?
Well, I mean, any new vehicle, I mean, not, you know, I can't generalize all of them, but, you know, we build world-class stuff now. And, you know, without a doubt, we can get particular and pick a car apart about, you know, who it's being applied to and who they're marketing to and what they could have done or should have done. But it's hard to find flaws because they know who they're building these cars for. They know exactly. It's just amazing the level they execute these new vehicles at. it's mind-blowing.
See, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking about it. Like, you know, you go to a car show and you see some of the older guys who used to build the cars. Like, they'll look at a B-body and they'll tell you, that's a Monday car. And they can reach underneath and they'll pull on the seams, or they'll pop up. They'll pull the carpet out of the trunk in a goat and go, okay, that's it.
Yeah, simplicity back then. I was in a Navigator yesterday, a new one.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the first time I've been in a new Navigator. And this is a friend of mine who has a business, and I seek a lot of advice from him. So I had lunch with him yesterday, and we got in his Navigator, and this was the third time I've been in one of these. And I'm like, this is insane. This is insane. Like, you sit down and you look around in the cabin, and I always ask myself, how would I explain this to my grandfather? How would I explain to him what I'm sitting in? How do I explain to him cars drive themselves, or you can buy a 200 and some mile an hour sedan, bone stock, that has a warranty to 75,000 miles. It's just nuts.
Well, do you think as an auto enthusiast, obviously with Mob Steel and you guys, I mean, do you think we're becoming less connected to the car, the actual driving experience with all this?
I don't think so. I think we're seeing drastic ends of both spectrums. I don't think the driving experience goes away. I think maybe the commuting experience gets changed. I think maybe our daily interaction with vehicles may get changed, for the next generation that is more interested in connectivity and stuff like that. But I think there'll always be a place. You know, we were at a sound panel. We watched an episode of Abstract that had Ralph Geels on it.
Oh, I love that on Netflix. By the way, anyone, if you haven't watched that, all of them are great. But Ralph, man, that's pretty damn cool.
And we got a chance to be a part of that at CCS. We were up in Harley Earl's studio. We brought a car there. And it was a night of discussing these forward-thinking autonomous vehicles, because that's what he worked on in the show. But we had brought a 58 Turnpike. So we had the drastic, you know, opposite. You know, this car was just a crazy, bizarre car, but gorgeous in its own right. And you could see that there's a world for both of those, because on this panel, they discuss that in depth. Because we had both worlds. Are we still going to appreciate driving in these classic cars or these muscle cars, or where is it going with?
But are we creating bad drivers? And I'm not saying this is like grumpy old guy, get off my lawn, but think about it. We have lane departure technology. We have early braking systems. We have reactive braking after you get an accident. We have sensors all over the cars and cameras all over the cars.
Yeah.
Used to be your dad would scream at you, pay attention, keep the car between the lines.
Yeah.
And now the car tells you when you're not between the lines anymore.
Yeah, it is wild. And that's some of the stuff I would
just feel like it's begging you to check your phone or talk on your phone or, you know, do something else other than just drive the car.
I think we're reacting to checking our phones and being distracted. Because if you look at the statistics, you know, driver distraction causes a massive amount of fatalities now in the U.S. And it's rose so much that we went to a convention that was just analysts from the automotive industry. Most bizarre thing I've ever been at. They wanted me to speak there. I had no idea why. These people are completely brilliant mathematicians and stuff. And I'm a guy who hits stuff with a hammer for a living. And they started talking about some of these statistics. And I was blown away that they're like, these people are in a fast forward movement to solve this death toll rising problem. And a lot of that is through autonomous cameras, departure.
Sure.
They talked about companies where they were talking about having upfits for older cars. They were talking about the new technology. And one thing that really hit me is they brought up a screen of all these horses. And there was one car in the middle of this. And I can't tell you which one it was, but obviously it was early 1900s. And they said, look at this photograph. It was dominated by horses. There was one vehicle. And then they throw up another photo where it has all of the Model Ts. And there's only a couple horse and carriages left on the street. And then they keep doing this. And then they show a picture of the vehicles that we drive. And then they circled several of the autonomous vehicles, the Tesla, the Bolt, you know, they had circled and think, you know, it made you think this is another transition. It's hard for us to digest this right now, but this is how we've applied this over the years. This is the same application. It's just another generational and product shift.
Well, I think I would say the two things. One, that the reason they brought you in is because your perspective as a designer, as a developer, as a fabricator, as someone of what you do for a living is something that a lot of these guys who are theorists or engineers, they don't look at things. You know that. My son's a software design engineer. He's analytical to the nth degree. He has the creative mind of a snail. And he'll be the first guy to tell you. But your right brain, you look at something and go, okay, this is how I want to, I can turn this into that.
Yeah.
And I think this is as much of a psychology function right now with autonomous vehicles as it is a mechanical function.
Yeah.
You're going to have to change everyone's mindset that it's okay for someone to not be driving. Every week on our, we get show prep stuff every morning for the radio show on the air.
Yeah.
And every, I swear to God, once a week I get a video of somebody sleeping behind the wheel of a Tesla
crazy.
And everybody freaking
it's crazy.
Out.
Yeah. It's crazy. And it's hard for me to identify with it. I'm with you. I unfortunately think if we disconnect, we're not going to have the same experience. We'll never have the same experience generationally, but
right.
I like the fact that my grandfather was an orphan and he had to do all these things and overcome all these obstacles, but he had all this experience. And, you know, then each generation gets to have their own experience. But some of those ones, like just the love affair of driving a car, I wouldn't want anybody to miss that, but that may have that in them. It's crazy. It's like,
yeah.
It's the most insane thing.
You might
ever.
Have a weekend car. You may have a car. You go out and rip around on the weekends in.
That's what one of the guys from the sound panel said. And to me, I start thinking, I'm like that. Well, maybe it and he said it raised his enthusiasm level for his love affair and his hobby of his cars. He said, because now that time he spent with his vehicles on the weekend driving through upstate New York where he was at,
yeah.
He said the experience was 100-fold because now it's his time of balance and reset and he's getting to spend this intimate time with his vehicle. And like, I mean, it was crazy the way he described it, but I was totally on board with it.
Hey, so, I'm doing a test review right now of a BMW M4 CS.
Okay.
3-liter twin turbo.
Oh, yeah.
7-speed, double clutch.
Track car.
Yeah. And when you're driving that car, there's two speakers in it. There's not even a door handle. There's a strap to pull the door shut.
Yeah, this is beautiful.
But you know what you do in that car? You drive. That's all you do is drive. Oh. You don't look at the phone. You don't check the message. You don't talk to Siri. You pay attention to what you're doing because you're right. You're driving a track car and it connects you to it.
Yep.
And I feel more connected to driving this car than I've felt in a long time driving
a
vehicle.
That's cool.
But that's to your just what you just said, Adam. I'm like sitting there going, I really love this feeling of just being able to drive his car and don't worry about the other things. I want to mention something else since we're talking about, you mentioned 200 miles an hour.
Okay.
This whole thing with Kevin Hart and the resto mod.
Yeah, I knew this was going to come up. This is big news right now in our world.
It's an interesting, so the state of California, I'm not quite clear on this, but it sounds like they confiscated the car.
Mm-hmm.
They've got it and they're looking into this. Is there responsibility, because I know Kevin Hart's, the last thing I'd read, they were going after the people that built the car.
Mm-hmm.
Saying you didn't put in the proper restraining system, you didn't do that. If you're going to put a Hellcat in a 70 Challenger, you can't make it as safe as a 2019 Challenger.
No, you can't. There's not. These cars have crash cells and, you know, tritium safety cells and crumple zones and, you know, the airbags. You can't. I don't really know of anybody who can effectively retrofit an old car with airbags. I've seen it done. I don't really know. You know, if that jives with the vehicle and the chassis and how safe it is, really, I don't know. I think you take when you put 700-800 horsepower in a car that was scary with 300.
Yeah.
I mean, this is common sense. And people come in and request these builds and they want more horsepower and
that's
they
what
want
I was gonna
all
ask
this
you.
Stuff.
So you get this request all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And you want this is somebody's dream vehicle. And this is something that they wanted really bad. And for us, it's like, I'm excited to go on this journey with them. I'm excited to create something that they want. You know, they share the same love of these old cars that we do. So we have that great common ground. And you want to create that for them. But a lot of times there's a disconnect between having the money to pay for that thing and understanding what you're buying. And even as much as, you know, we try to educate them, it's like, it's not a brand new car. This still has 60-year-old parts on it or 50-year-old parts.
Sure.
That have been reconditioned, or you know, you try to replace everything you can, or what are you building? Do you have $1 million to build a car, or are you trying to get this car done for 70, 80, 100 grand? Because a lot of situations these builders are in too is they're on a budget, and building a car like that, it's a function of time and money. And when you build an old car, and you do it enough times, you don't know how they build these new cars for what they build them for. I mean, we know how it's done. I've been a part of it. But it's really an incredible thing that they can put these cars together for 40, 50, 60, even 100 grand and 150 grand, some of these performance cars. It would cost in the old, you know, doing it to an old car would cost millions of dollars.
So what happens to the industry if a state like California, which is pretty proactive when it comes to safety stuff and CAFE and all the different things that they do, if they come out and say there has to be some sort of safety standards for retro mods, what would it do to the industry? You just wouldn't build cars in California?
Yeah, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. You wouldn't. And it would just trickle down through. The problem is, you know, we need people. You need to look out for people's safety. At the end of the day, you know, we're just trying to create. We don't want loss of life, period. Whether it's homeless or people on highways and cars or whatever, I get it. But a lot of times I feel like the situation is, you know, we almost have to feel like we have to protect people from themselves at a certain point in time. You know, are you going to be responsible with 1,000 horsepower or not? Because 1,000 horsepower in any car is going to kill somebody. A car with 400 horsepower at 100 miles an hour, you're not going to survive that wreck. So at a certain point in time, I think, you know, people need to take account for their own actions at a certain point in time. We lost that a long time ago. And, you know,
what are you talking about? There's no lawyer ads on TV.
Exactly. It's just, it kind of bums me out a little bit that somebody can have the resources to buy that car. And, you know, I would hope that there would be some process that educated them. And we try to do that.
Well, I appreciate you answering that because it is a tough question, but it's something that I think it's not going to go away anytime soon, especially when I can go get a Hellcat for a crate motor. I can go out and get a Coyote and put it in a Mustang. And, you know, I mean, think about what you're being able and look at the, you know, all the stuff that you can get from GM. I mean,
crazy.
Chevy performance stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to get another TV show.
You know, we had decided what we were doing. We had got our message across and we've had some other opportunities, and I don't want to say too much, but I would say that we're heading back in a direction of some sort of larger media scale thing, but this time it will be, you know, what we're up to now. We have some really exciting things in the near horizon, and it's something that we've been working on for a long time, and I'm excited to see it come together. It's going to separate our brand from everybody else. It's going to get our message across of the importance of bringing the wealth back to these communities. We've talked about it long enough. We're going to take action, whether it sinks us or not. So we are going to make a massive investment locally with the help of some partners. And we're going to try to play this out live in front of everybody. We're going to open up a plant.
We're in.
And we're going to get some boys and girls through there and men and women. And we're going to build value back in these people. And we're going to show everybody that the real assets are the human beings here. And show everybody what all these businesses have in common here, and we want some work back here. We've got the resources, and hopefully we're going to show people how to do that with some virtue.
We're in. So Dancing with Mob Steel not going to happen, where you guys will build a car and then learn a new dance every week.
I'm hoping we get to follow some cool cars, a cool story, and we get to bring people in and experience really what builds Detroit and builds the characters around here, because I think it's exciting and I think it would draw businesses in from all over the country, maybe even from the West Coast where they're having some trouble. Maybe they need to refine their lives back here in the Motor City.
Come on, Kevin, get your ass back here. We'll build you a good car.
It's where these cars belong.
So if I walked up to you and said that you have an unlimited budget, you can have any car in the world, what do you want? For me, it's simple. I mean, I know which one I want, but what for you?
Oh, man. It's so hard.
Really? Almost too many for you?
I used to say right off the bat, if I could be left with one car, and I said this we were actually at an interview on Overhaul, and I said, leave me with a 64 Continental and a Bob Seger of some sort, whether it's a tape deck in the car, whatever's in there, just leave me with that. But it's changed now. I've had a lot of cars now. I've been fortunate enough to have owned a bunch of vehicles, and I have several, and they're in rotation, and now I'm starting to figure out, like, wait a minute, I like this one too. And now with the new cars coming out, it's getting even worse. Mid-engine Corvettes and just the performance of these sedans, and it's insane. It's really getting hard. Like, if I actually had the resources, it would get more difficult. It would get more difficult to pick.
Wouldn't go hypercar, none of those?
No.
Not a Koenigsegg or none of those crazy ones?
I was just with a friend yesterday has the new GT. That would be as hypercar as I get. That car's insane.
Yeah.
I would probably have to be that car. I would probably get a GT, or if I could cut up a new C8 and do my own ZR1 version of it, maybe.
Okay, can I ask a question about the C8? And you don't have to answer if you don't want to.
I'll answer it. Love the C8.
I don't.
I know a lot of people won't.
Because it's not a Corvette. It looks like if you turn it sideways, I'm like, cool, that's the Acura NSX. Cool, it's a Ferrari.
Yep.
I've seen this car. Like, is that a function of you as a designer? Is that a function of having a mid-engine car, you can only do so much with the body?
No, you know what it is for me? What? Is I like when the Corvette changes, because GM's genius. And they have such a following and such a DNA built into those cars. And nobody likes change that they have a grip on, but they're genius. They know that it's ran its course. They know they need to attract a whole nother audience. And they always do it in a fashion where it's hard to digest at first, but I know that car is a massive, massive hit for them, and it's barely hit the road. This is where that car needs to go. GM clearly knows that. The performance of this vehicle now, you know, they've always set the playing field for pound, dollar for dollar.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah, that the price point's ridiculous.
You can argue it all you want, but that ZR1s and the Z06s and the Grand Sports, when they hit that track, they just flex on everybody. They flex on cars that are $500,000. So they've been playing in a front mount engine world too. So now just think about what they're going to be able to do with the capacity of a mid-engine mount car like that. I mean, they're going to show the world performance that they've never seen.
They've been at VIR the past couple of weeks, haven't they? They've been doing stuff in Virginia.
I've
been seeing more and more. I think we don't get actual reviews till like the 16th or something.
Yep.
Now a lot of guys are putting videos up.
You're starting to see the burnouts.
Yeah.
I love it.
You're starting to see the performance. Okay, so maybe I'll buy in a little bit on that one, man.
No, and it takes time. I like the fact that you say that because I think if it's a little bit hard to digest the new design and it's a little bit hard to digest, I fly by that rule. When I decide what colors or what I'm going to do to a car or the little treatments I'm going to do to it, I try to keep a car's DNA. But when I try to switch it up to make it my own, if it's not offensive to most of the people in the room somehow, it's nothing new. It's nothing new. It doesn't do anything.
Well, I keep going back to your Pastor's Continental because if I tell someone the paint color,
yeah, it's weird.
They don't understand. They go, what do you mean?
And look at all the cars now, Destroyer gray with the red roof. So come on.
Yeah.
You have to be ahead of the curve. In my game, that's why I like the Corvette. I like cars that come out and people are like, what? I'm like, okay, they're onto something. You need to take a chance. If you're not ahead of that curve in design and engineering, if you're not out front, you don't reap any of the benefits. You don't have people chasing you, trying to act and be like you, and you're not ahead of the game. You know, and I think the American automotive companies, they step out when they have to step out. I mean, look at the 300, look at the retro cars they've built. This mid-engine C8 Corvette's a perfect example of that. They're not scared. They know what they're doing.
So my son, Adam, thinks you are officially the coolest guy in the world because you did a car for Post Malone.
Well, his name's Adam, so he probably officially is a cool guy.
Oh, he is a cool guy. Yeah, he's cooler than the other side of your pillow. I mean, that guy's cool, man.
So awesome.
So the Post, and I saw some of the pictures and stuff.
Yeah.
That truck is so cool.
Yeah, the old trucks that these guys, young guys are into them too.
So did someone sell him on that or he came to you guys?
Product.
And said,
that's just
what
my
I want.
It's just my product on the car. It's just my product. I'm a part of so many vehicles now.
Okay.
With our other wheel business.
How many cars have, and you don't have to give us names, obviously, because you can't. How many vehicles have you done where you get paid to not put your name on it for somebody else?
A lot.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Because I always tell the story. There's this guy who's like this cheese master. He's in Wisconsin, and they did a show with him.
Yeah.
And this guy makes this small batch, and he makes this badass cheese, right? And this dude's won every award, all their beard awards and all this stuff. And they asked him, they said, so about 90% of what he makes, he doesn't even put his name on.
Yeah.
And he sells it at a premium, and he goes, they know.
Yeah. I mean, if there's other people involved, I mean, I'm at a point now where we've already made our mark as builders, and I enjoy the scrappiness and the toughness of these young guys and women building these cars. It's not easy. It's a tough, tough gig. So I enjoy being a part of that stuff. It's almost as good as building the car because now, you know, we like the product, like when we build wheels and different components for people's cars. And we have the ability now as a company to say, hey, you know what? Especially some of these younger builders to support them. Say, here's some product, here's some stuff and give it to them. And these guys are invested in us. You know what I mean? And that's the way this world works. You're doing it right here by connecting people through the internet and your pages and stuff like that. It's all being connected. It's about building relationships. And that's one of the things that I hold that higher than anything in my life is building relationships is the most important thing I do when I leave the house. And we built great relationships with all these builders. And it's just really neat to be a part of all that. And like I was telling you, I don't really think about it. When I think back of who we've done business with, who we've built cars for, where we've been, what we've done, it's incredible. Like it just, oh yeah, we've done that. Oh, we had lunch with Snoop Dogg. Oh yeah, I've had dinner with Utzel a bunch of times. Oh yeah, I got to be at the all people meeting, you know, with GM and all this. And like just the exposure and the opportunity is really incredible.
Is there someone that you go, I can't believe I'm having a conversation about cars with?
Oh, for me, it's any global director, any Tim Turvey, any head of design, global, I mean, anybody that works in the automotive industry. Now, I've sat in rooms with athletes and entertainers and stuff like that, but for me, I've been in rooms with people that have owned businesses that have accomplished things in life that I can't fathom how you get from point A to point B, and it intrigues me.
They brought Carroll Shelby to the auto show probably about 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And we were there, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like just gar, gar, gar.
Yeah.
And I look over, and this is during the media day. And for folks who don't know, during the media day, it's not open to the general public. To the auto show, it's not a lot of people there. I look over, there's Ed Welburn and Ralph Schill and one of the Fords. They were waiting.
Yeah.
To go talk to him, and he's just sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
Got his hat on.
Yep.
And they're all like going to the altar of Carroll Shelby, and I got to interview him. And the whole time in the back of my head, I'm going like, oh my God, this is Carroll Shelby. Oh my God, I'm talking to Carroll. And he's the nicest guy in the world. I'll tell you what, man, it's kind of fun building them cars, man. Dave Gurney got a big old head. We had to put a bubble in the damn thing.
So that's my experience everywhere I go. I don't know. Like, I appreciate the opportunity just sitting here. Like, well, how did I land myself in a radio station? This is something as a kid you would dream of, being on radio or TV or any of this stuff. And to meet people like Carroll Shelby, or to stand in the tunnel at AutoZone Stadium to run out and meet some fans and sign autographs. And I'm in a tunnel with, you know, John Force and Leah Pritchard and a friend of mine, Rutledge Wood, and a bunch of NASCAR drivers. And in some, you're just like, how is this happening? How is this happening? How did I go from, you know?
Because you have a passion for it, Adam. At the end of the day, whatever you do, we tell everyone in any, whether it's radio, podcasting, whatever you're going to do in life, you're going to spend a lot of your life doing it, so you better love it.
Yeah.
Or you're going to hate it.
Yeah.
And you love it, and it comes across whether it's during the show, and I know folks have been asking about that, or even every vehicle you guys build, I know it's yours. Man, hey, man, Scott cool. Pollard, one of my very first podcasts in the garage.
No kidding.
Was Marvin.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talked about Marvin. I love that story. Google it, folks, if you haven't. That car.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's his baby, man. That's one of the best car stories I've ever heard.
That guy's good on any podcast. He does stand-up comedy. He does ad-lib radio stuff. We met some wild characters, man. Yeah. Pollard's a wild dude.
Yeah. So it's great stuff, man. Adam Janai, mobsteel.com is the website. So we got a lot of stuff working with you guys.
Yeah.
I keep trying to figure out how to do a Seeger car for charity.
Man, are you kidding me?
Well, the last Seegers. Two are right. I mean, you know we're going to wrap it up at LCA. We have to.
Yeah, put me in a room with Seeger. You want to see a little kid? I would act like a fool with that guy in a room.
All right. We do a lot of stuff with Bob. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know. That's
Bob Seeger Boulevard. Do you want one of the signs?
I mean, I mentioned his name like 10 times since I walked
in. I know that. That was about as subtle as a hand grenade, like Bob Seeger, Bob Seeger, Bob. We'll see if we can grab you a Bob. We did Bob Seeger Boulevard in Allen Park, so we'll get you one of the street signs for the shop. Is that cool?
Yeah, that would be amazing. Are you kidding me?
I was kidding about making Thunderbirds, but how could you take a Thunderbird and trick it out?
Oh, easy.
Could you?
What?
It's a Seeger song, Making Thunderbirds.
Man, I just bought a trick 79 Cougar.
Okay.
What year Thunderbird are you thinking?
I don't know. Back in 60. Well, he's talking to, what's the song? Back in 65, we're making Thunderbirds, I think.
Oh, yeah.
About to look it up and see what the year was.
Those are sleds back then.
We could have fun with that?
65. Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. It's nice to see that I've committed you to a $100,000 project while you're coming for a podcast.
Anything for Bob.
Is that what it is?
No.
Adam Janai, Mobsteel, man. This was fun, dude.
Yeah. Seriously. This
Let's
is great,
stay in touch.
Man.
We want to come down next time. We want to come to you guys.
Bring it.
We'll come hang out.
Bring it. We'll do a podcast out of the old van.
Get me a plasma cutter, and I will make hell rain down. You got one of those?
You're welcome. You can come to my shop anytime and play with the toys. Those are toys, man.
All right.
They're there for people to have fun with.
You sound a little bit like John Gruden there. I'll tell you what, man. These are toys, man. Get out there, man.
Or as a friend of mine, Jesse James, said best, it's just knowing how to use the equipment. That's all it is. Once you know how to use the equipment, you make anything you want.
Oh, I can fake it till I make it.
Perfect.
That's damn right, man.
That's
Adam,
what I,
this
that's
is awesome, dude.
I've done that my whole career.
All right. See you guys. Bye.
Thank you.
There you go. Matt Janai. Mobsteel. Mobsteel.com is the website. Interesting to see what this guy comes up with next. Hope you enjoy that as much as I did. That was pretty damn cool. Again, I'm Big Jim O'Brien. This is Big Jim's Garage here in B-Pod Studios. Subscribe everywhere you normally subscribe for podcasts. We'll keep you up to date. Lots of cool podcasts on the way, too. We got some really interesting guests. We're kind of in that period now where it's neat. You're at the end of the racing season, towards the end of NASCAR. You know, F1's going on and stuff. So we get to start talking about new cars for 2020, designs, things like that. I'm going to hopefully spend some time with Ed Welburn. If you don't know that name, he was the former design chief for General Motors. Neat dude. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at WCSXJim. I host a morning show here in Detroit, Michigan. And thanks again for checking out Big Jim's Garage. Be good.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.